Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting legal puzzle for you. Where do anti-discrimination laws end and the right to private association begin?
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
We're going to unpack the landmark case of EEOC v. the Chicago Club to understand the rules around exemptions to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, specifically what it really takes for a club to be considered a bona fide private membership club.
It's a fascinating tightrope walk the law performs, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You have this bedrock principle in Title VII that says no discrimination in employment,
mm-hmm.
and then this specific carve out for private clubs.
Right.
It forces us to consider, what's the fundamental purpose of non-discrimination laws? And, you know, why would we make an exception for certain private groups?
Exactly. And to get a handle on this, you need to know a bit about the Chicago Club itself. It's not some fly-by-night operation founded all the way back in 1869. It's an institution in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Long history.
Yeah. One of our sources put it perfectly. In a city with a storied tradition of private clubs, all lists begin with the Chicago Club. It is relevant, like elephants and lions at the waterhole.
Wow, that paints a picture.
It really does. Gives you a real sense of its standing. So our goal in this deep dive is to dissect this pivotal case. By understanding the court's decision, you'll gain a much clearer picture of the specific criteria a private club must meet to be exempt from Title VII regulations.
So let's dive straight into the details of the case itself. It's Equal Employment Opportunity Commission v. the Chicago Club. And the decision came down from the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in 1996.
Okay.
The central question for you to understand is this. Did the Chicago Club genuinely qualify for that bona fide private membership club exemption under federal law specifically, 42 U.S.C. Section 2000 EB?
Meaning, could they basically ignore Title VII?
Well, yeah, if the court said yes, then the club wouldn't be subject to Title VII's reporting requirements and its general rules against employment discrimination. Big deal.
Okay, so let's really break down this idea of a bona fide private membership club for you. What's the main point of Title VII in the first place, and why does this exemption even exist?
In its essence, Title VII is about ensuring a level playing field in employment. It prohibits employers from discriminating against individuals based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. It's, you know, a cornerstone of workplace fairness.
Right. Fundamental stuff.
But Congress also recognized that the freedom to associate with others is a fundamental right. This exemption for bona fide private membership clubs is kind of a nod to that right, allowing certain truly private groups to maintain their exclusivity without the same legal obligations as public-facing employers. It's about protecting the autonomy of private association.
That makes sense when you frame it like that. So what kind of organization was the Chicago Club that ended up at the center of this legal question? What were some of its key features that really mattered to the court's decision?
Several elements of the Chicago Club's structure and how it operated were critical. First off, its governance was member controlled.
Okay.
They had a board of directors, but those directors were elected by the members themselves. That's important.
Member control. Got it.
Second, their membership process was far from casual. You, as a prospective member, couldn't just fill out a form. It required a current member to propose you, another to second the proposal, then approval by the board.
Wow.
And even a period where existing members could weigh in with their feedback.
So definitely not a situation where just anyone could join off the street.
Absolutely not. They also had a limit on their total membership, authorized at 1,450 members.
Okay, a cap.
Yeah. Their physical facilities and the services they offered were primarily for the use of those members and their invited guests. And, importantly for the legal analysis, they operated as a nonprofit entity, funded by the dues and fees paid by their members.
Right.
All of these characteristics were pieces of the puzzle the court had to assemble.
Right. So the court looks at all of that about the club and then has to measure it against some kind of legal standard to decide if they really qualify for this exemption. What were those key legal criteria the court focused on for you to understand?
The court essentially relied on a three-part test that has developed through the statute itself and previous court decisions. The first key element is privacy.
Privacy. Okay.
The court looked at whether the club truly maintained a private environment. This involved reserving their facilities for members and their guests and not engaging in public advertising to attract new members or promote their services.
Makes sense.
Now, what's interesting for you is that the fact that members could bring guests didn't automatically destroy that privacy in the eyes of the court.
Oh, okay.
As long as that guest access remained under the control of the members themselves.
Okay, so member-controlled access to guests is a crucial distinction there for you. What's the second part of this legal yardstick?
The second critical aspect is selectivity. This went to the heart of how exclusive and structured the club's membership process was. The court took note of the limited membership cap, the necessity of having sponsors, the board's approval process, and the opportunities for existing members to provide input.
All those steps you mentioned.
Exactly. This was strong evidence that the club was, in the words of Judge Kahn, extremely selective. It wasn't just about saying no to a lot of people. It was about having a deliberate and meaningful process for choosing who could become a member.
And what's the third and final part of this test for you to keep in mind?
The final piece of the puzzle is tax-exempt status. The fact that the Chicago Club was operating as a nonprofit organization was another factor that supported their claim for the exemption.
Why was that important?
Well, it suggested to the court that the club's primary goal wasn't to make money in a commercial sense, but rather to serve the social or recreational interests of its members. Less like a business, more like a private association.
So it sounds like the club had a pretty strong case based on those three criteria, but the EEOC obviously felt differently when they brought the lawsuit. What were their main arguments for you to be aware of, and why did the court ultimately disagree with them?
Yeah, the EEOC's main arguments centered on two key points for you. First, they argue that because the club allowed members to bring guests, it wasn't truly private, but had become too public.
Okay, the guest argument again.
Right. Second, they pointed to the fact that many of the club's members were professionals, like brokers and executives, suggesting that it wasn't really a private social club, but more like a, you know, a business networking organization in disguise.
And the court didn't find those arguments convincing.
Not in the least. When it came to guest access, the court's key focus, as we discussed, was on member control.
Right, who's inviting them.
Exactly. Because the members were responsible for their guests, and the club's facilities weren't generally open to the public, the court concluded that this guest policy didn't undermine the club's fundamental private nature. Regarding the professional status of the members, the court reasoned that having professionals as members was consistent with the club's long history and the shared interests that likely drew the members together in the first place. Their professional roles didn't automatically transform the club into a public accommodation or a commercial enterprise.
So basically, professionals can have private clubs too.
Pretty much, yeah. The court saw it as part of the club's identity.
There were some really insightful quotes in the material we looked at that help you understand this better. One that really stood out was, "A private club is a group of individuals who imagine the membership as a personification of the club's priorities." How does that idea apply to the Chicago Club in this context for you?
That quote really gets to the essence of what the court was considering, I think. It suggests that a private club's identity is fundamentally defined by the shared values and vision of its members. The Chicago Club, with its long history and very selective membership process, had clearly cultivated a specific identity and a strong sense of community among its members. The court recognized this and understood that the club's membership criteria and how it operated were all geared towards maintaining that specific identity.
Right.
Rather than simply excluding certain groups for discriminatory reasons in a commercial setting, it's about shared purpose.
And the court was very clear and direct in its ruling that the club did indeed qualify for this exemption, right? They didn't mince words.
Absolutely not. The court didn't hold back, stating very definitively, the club more than easily qualifies under the exemption.
More than easily. Wow.
Yeah. And Judge Kahn's specific comment about the club being extremely selective and how the membership process ensured that members shared common bonds really emphasizes the court's strong conviction that the Chicago Club genuinely met all the legal requirements for the exemption.
So what are the bigger implications of this case for you? What are the most important takeaways for understanding this specific exemption under Title VII more broadly?
Well, this case is significant for you because it firmly establishes that genuinely private clubs do have a protected right to associate freely under the First Amendment. And this exemption in Title VII is there to protect that right.
Okay, protects association rights.
But, and this is a big, but it's also crucial for you to understand that this isn't a loophole for businesses to simply claim to be private to get around anti-discrimination laws.
Right. Can't just slap a label on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To actually qualify for this exemption, a club must genuinely meet all three of those key criteria: privacy in its operations, a truly selective membership process, and operating as a nonprofit, all three.
Right. So for you, the crucial takeaway is that just putting up a members-only sign on the door isn't going to cut it. Not even close.
Precisely. The subtle but important point about guest access is also key for you. Allowing members to bring guests, when that access is controlled by the members themselves, is generally permissible and doesn't automatically destroy a club's private status. However, if the club's facilities or services are open to the general public in any meaningful way, that would very likely jeopardize the exemption. Big difference.
Got it. Public access is the red line.
Yeah. And finally, remember that the selectivity in membership has to be real and structured. It's not just about excluding certain groups. It needs to be about a genuine process of choosing members based on shared interests or criteria that align with the club's purpose. It has to make sense for that club.
So to bring it all together for you, EEOC, the Chicago Club, really provides a clear legal framework for understanding when an organization can legitimately claim that bona fide private membership club exemption from Title VII.
Yeah.
It all boils down to demonstrating genuine privacy in how it operates, a truly selective and meaningful membership process, and functioning as a nonprofit entity.
That's a very concise and accurate summary for you. It makes it clear that while the principle of anti-discrimination is fundamental, the law also recognizes and respects the right of individuals to form truly private associations. Mm. The Chicago Club case serves as a clear illustration of what that looks like in practice and the specific legal criteria that courts will examine.
It certainly gives you a lot to think about.
Yeah.
When you consider this balance between the important principles of anti-discrimination and the fundamental freedom of association, well, it really makes you wonder how that legal line should be drawn for organizations claiming private club status in today's constantly evolving social landscape.
Yeah, it's not always a bright line, is it?
Definitely not. That's something for you to continue considering. Thanks for diving into this important case with me.
My pleasure. It's a great case to unpack.